Hello, and welcome to River Writers, a production of the Writers Guild of Astoria, a 501c3 nonprofit supporting writers and the literary arts in Astoria and the Lower Columbia region. I'm your host, Marianne Monson. Aired the second Monday of each month at 9 a.m., River Writers provides a chance to peek behind the curtain at the craft of writing. What motivates writers, and what have they learned through their creative process? I am thrilled to have with me in the studio today a local journalist and poet, Deborah Steele Hazen. Welcome, Deborah.
Thank you, Marianne. It's good to be here.
It's wonderful to have you. I've been really excited to talk with you today, and I know that you have a long career in journalism and have written hundreds, if not thousands, of articles as a staff writer for the Oregon Journal and then as an award-winning editor, reporter, and publisher at the Clatskanie Chief. Is that right?
That's right, yes.
Tell us about that. Tell us how you got started with writing.
Well, I come from a family of writers, actually on both sides of my family, but my father's side of the family, the Steele family, owned the Clatskanie Chief newspaper and published it, edited it, wrote it for a total of 92 years, from 1922, when my grandfather came to Clatskanie as a young journalist and World War I veteran and bought the newspaper for $10 and taking over the payments on the linotype machine. Within the year, he had married the mayor's daughter, Milvina, who was also a writer, and together they ran the paper for 50 years until my grandmother died suddenly, basically suffering a heart attack at her desk in the chief office. And then during that time, my father and I at times had joined them on the staff.
Wow. So you really grew up in the industry. There's a long family connection here.
I did, yes. Yeah. I've never been able to actually prove it to my satisfaction genealogically, but supposedly the family lore is that we descended from Sir Richard Steele, who was the founder of the first English language newspaper, along with Joseph Addison, the Tatler and the Spectator in London in the late 1600s. So,
wow.
I hope that's true.
Yeah.
It may not be, but
I mean, sometimes family legends are as important for what they tell us, even more than just the truth involved, right?
Exactly. Exactly. Yes.
They tell us what the family wants to believe about itself, if nothing else.
Right.
So,
right.
Yeah, that's really neat. That's amazing. So, what was it like for you growing up around that environment? Like, how did it impact the way you thought about the news?
Well, of course, the chief covered the local news of Clatskanie.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
They sometimes, if national or international or statewide news impacted the Clatskanie community directly, then that would be printed in the paper. But mostly it dealt with local news. I could remember when I was a child growing up in the 50s, coming home, or my father would come home from work, and this was when they were still using the old hot lead style of printing, and he would always have his sleeves rolled up when working at the office, and I could read the paper that was printed on his forearms from him leaning on the lead while he was setting type. So it was the kind of thing that the newspaper was, you not only wrote it, but you set the type and you handled the papers and delivered them. So,
and you sometimes wore the actual ink on your skin.
Exactly, yes.
That's a beautiful visual detail of him having the print on his arms.
Yeah.
I love that. So I know a lot of kids So, for instance, I will admit that I started a newspaper when I was young. It was dedicated to updates about the world of hamsters because I had hamsters and my friends were all obsessed. We all had hamsters and guinea pigs. So anyway, did you do a similar thing? Like, when you were a kid, did you start your own newspaper with friends, or when do you remember writing your first article?
You know, actually, I probably wrote poetry before I wrote a newspaper article.
Really? Okay.
My father loved poetry, actually, as did my grandfather. And rather than fairy stories, typical bedtime stories, my father would read to me the poems of Robert Service and Rudyard Kipling. Later, middle school, junior high type years, I had my first poem actually published in The Chief. My grandparents published it
because
they
sweet.
Thought it was good.
Yeah.
And about that same time, my seventh grade teacher had assigned us to recite a poem. And I remember liking that, memorizing a short little poem. I memorized Ogden Nash poem about cows and got a lot of praise for it from my teacher. And so then that prompted me to memorize other poetry and start writing it years. And Madras High School at that time had an excellent journalism program, was editor in chief of that student newspaper when I was a senior. And interestingly enough, that year my sister was editor of the college newspaper at what is now West Oregon State University, and my father was editor of the Madras Pioneer, and then my grandparents were editor and publishers of the Classic Night Chief.
So. Oh, so you had three generations in journalism.
Yeah.
How cute is that? That's adorable.
And then as soon as I graduated from high school, we moved back to Classic Night from Madras, and I went immediately then to work at the Chief to earn money for college, and was working with my father and my grandfather and grandmother. And
wow.
So there were three generations of us living together.
And what kind of tasks were you given, like when you first started at the paper as a kid?
My grandfather was kind of an old-fashioned community newspaper man.
Mm-hmm.
And his philosophy was that there were three main events in people's lives. You were born, you got married, and you died.
Mm-hmm. And yeah. For a long time, that was the only acceptable reason for a woman's name to appear in print, right? That was very much like a Victorian ideal. But those three things, it was allowable. Otherwise, you needed to stay out of the headlines.
Actually, I think that the Chief, as far back as I have archives, women were mentioned in the Chief, but they were usually mentioned as Mrs. John Smith.
Right.
Which my father and I changed that.
That's wonderful. So so sorry, did you say what some of your first jobs were?
Well, birth, death, and marriages.
And that's what you were in charge of writing,
well,
tracking down.
Yeah.
Cool. That makes sense.
And then also we had a column that was at various times called Personals, and then later it was called About Town. And, and we actually had a list of people that we would call.
Yeah.
And say, you know, did you go anywhere this week? Did you have any visitors?
Call on the phone, because back in the day we only had phones.
Exactly.
So you'd have to call them to ask if they had anything interesting happen.
Yes.
Should be printed in the paper.
And I didn't really enjoy doing that, but was my grandfather was very, but you know, back in the 60s, he was very insistent that we continue doing that.
And, continue the traditions. That's really neat. I imagine that, that just is such a fascinating way that your family got to participate in the evolution of journalism, right? As it shifted over time. So because it was all within the same family.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, because we did go from the hot set letter press to, first kind of computerized type sewing machines, and then to computers.
Yeah.
And we shut down our letterpress in 1973. Actually, when our linotypist quit, we were one of the, we were later doing that than most newspapers.
Huh.
And from then on, we were actually printed on the Daily Astorian Press.
Oh, that's interesting. So one thing that really stands out to me is that, in my mind, journalism and journalistic writing is usually on one end of the spectrum. And way on the other end is poetry. Mm-hmm. Like I would say that's the most artistic, the most open to interpretation, free form, like no rules, right? So there's the spectrum. And I just think it's really interesting that poetry kind of brought you to journalism, just because in my mind they're such opposites, you know? Can you talk about the connection between those two a little bit?
Well, you know, I don't disagree with you that they are on opposite, that at least one would think of them.
Yeah.
The fact that I came from a family who were journalists, but also lovers of poetry, I think that it was, that's how I got into both. But I would also argue that both poetry, at least how I practice it, and journalistic writing, you know, seek to tell truth in concise language.
Mm-hmm. True. Yeah.
And although poetry is subjective as opposed to objective, in journalism, finding the right word to express the truth, whether it is of factual events or the truth of the factual emotion you are trying to capture in words, they are related.
I understand that relationship. Like, I can really see that. I appreciate you connecting that for me, because it's true. I think that great poetry is really concise. It's kind of boiled down to the essence of the thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that is true of journalism as well, right? You want that, you really strive for that precision of language and concision, like as few number of words as possible, really. And of course, there's a lot of examples that come to mind of great journalist writers who crossed over into writing fiction. I mean, Ernest Hemingway is like the first one that comes to mind. And you always sense from them like this really like spare prose, right? That's part of their style. But I can't name very many who cross from journalism into poetry, but maybe I just don't know that that's their background. So I think that's kind of a unique and wonderful perspective. So yeah, thank you. And I guess another question I'd like to ask is, what you think the value of good journalism is to a community? Like, what do you think that does for a community? What has it done for your community to be part of it?
I think that accurate information and communication is about the most important thing in a free society.
Mm-hmm.
So I actually mourn, you know, the death of community homegrown journalism. The Chief still exists under a small company that owns several small newspapers, but I was going, or either myself or one of my reporters was going to every school board meeting, every city council meeting, every PUD meeting, every home sporting event, and reporting on them. And I'm told all the time, even now, 8 years after I retired, that that kind of coverage is missed.
Yeah.
But you know, the fact is that it was very difficult to sustain mm-hmm. a small newspaper in today's world where the media is been taken over by the internet and mm-hmm. and television. And in Classic and I especially, we have newspapers only have two ways to make money, and one is through subscriptions and the other is through the sale of advertising. And because the Classic and I community really hasn't grown in 60 years, the small business community has died, and there just is no advertising left. So that's a sad thing in Classic and I. You know, we have community Facebook pages that that people discuss the news. But sadly, the people that discuss the news are not always aware of the facts or the background information that is important in order to analyze those facts. And so I think that is a loss.
Yeah, and I think when there used to be public forum discussion through newspapers, it was always curated, right?
Right.
So there was an editor saying, no, that comment doesn't, you know.
Exactly.
It's not done in good faith. It's not responsible, so we're not putting it in there. So, and that, of course, is missing in a lot of online discussion. So if you are just joining me, this is Marianne Monson for KMUN's River Writers, sponsored by the Writers Guild of Astoria. This morning, I am speaking with author Deborah Steele Hazen. And she is a journalist and a poet. And we have been exploring the evolution of journalism and her longtime connection with it. And to me, it's such a reminder, Debbie, that of the importance of supporting our local newspapers and our public radio stations, for instance, like KMUN. So I wanted to ask you a little bit about the upcoming Raymond Carver Festival that will be held in Kleskenai on May 19th and 20th. Can you tell us a little bit about how you became involved with this project?
Certainly. So Raymond Carver, who many know is a world-renowned short story writer and poet, was actually born in downtown Kleskenai, Oregon, on May 25th, 1938. He then left the local community with his parents when he was just very young, 2 years old, I think. And he spent most of his time growing up in the Yakima, Washington area. But on his later, when he began publishing, he always listed on the fly pages, fly leaves of his books that he was born in Kleskenai, Oregon. He had never returned to Kleskenai as an adult until one day in late August of 1984. And he and his companion, Tess Gallagher, who later became his wife, were returning to her home in Port Townsend, Washington, where Carver is buried now. They had been to the Ashland Shakespearean Festival, and they were driving up I-5. Back to Port Townsend, and Tess knew that they were getting close to Kleskenai, and she knew that Ray had always been somewhat curious about it. So she talked him into taking a little detour off of I-5 and coming into Kleskenai. And the first thing they did was to stop at the Kleskenai Library, which did have his several of his books. I think they were all paperback versions. on the shelves there, and he signed his books and talked to the people in the library a little bit, and then he left, and they called me, and I'll be very excited, Debbie, Raymond Carver's in town, you know, Raymond Carver, the writer. Well, I did know who he was, but I had only just recently figured that out, because in 1984, he was just really reaching a position of prominence and recognition. He had been nominated for a Pulitzer Prize. And a friend of mine had given me a copy of a New York Times Sunday magazine, which featured an article about him, which I had fortunately read, but I had not read anything that he had written.
Mm-hmm.
We had been for several months prior to that, even before I'd seen the article in the magazine, he had been, I'd been getting press releases about his books or awards that he had written. And so I kept trying to figure out, well, who is this Raymond Carver from Clatskanie? Because there was one Carver family from Clatskanie, but I knew he wasn't a member of that family. So I was fortunate that my friend had given me this article.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, but I hadn't read any of his books, so I couldn't have been, well, I was hardly prepared, let's say, to interview a writer who was reaching international prominence in mm-hmm. the field. So anyway, I grabbed my camera and my notebook and
being the true journalist that you were, that your family raised you to be.
Absolutely. And the people at the library.
This is exactly what I would have done, by the way. I just want to throw that in there.
Good girl. the people at the library had told him that they had sent him up to the castle. Now, uh-huh. the castle is a Victorian mansion in Clatskanie that is owned by the Clatskanie senior citizens. And mm-hmm. they have a meal site in the basement, and then the upper two floors are like a museum.
Uh-huh.
And in this museum, they have a little room, and we still do, as a matter of fact. And I'm a guide there now, but dedicated to a Dr. Wooden, mm-hmm. who was the doctor who delivered Raymond Carver. And in fact, he practiced in the Clatskanie area for 50 years, and he delivered thousands, actually,
yeah.
babies.
Wow.
And including my own father. And when he retired in 1957, the community had a big picnic for him in the park. And people who were there who had been delivered by him, and there were many, had signed this Dr. Wooden baby book.
Oh, my God!
I mean, this was so small
town. Love small towns.
Yes.
Small towns are the best.
And Raymond Carver had been delivered by Dr. Wooden in the brick building that Dr. Wooden had built during the 1920s and had like a two-room hospital
yeah.
in the upper part. And
wow.
that was where Raymond Carver was born. So anyway, he and Tess went up to the castle
uh-huh.
and the little old ladies who worked there. He said, you know, he wanted to see to sign the Dr. Wooden baby book, which he did. And we still have that today.
It's so great.
And they asked him, well, do you want the whole tour? And he didn't want the whole tour.
He's
and so,
like, that's okay.
Yes. So when I got up there, then I said, is he here? And they said, well, no, he signed the baby book. But then they didn't want the tour.
So you're like chasing him around, but you just missed him.
Exactly.
Okay.
But the people at the library had told me he was driving a Mercedes
uh-huh.
with New York plates on it. Well, you know, we don't have
There's
a
not
lot.
Too many in Clatskanie on a given day.
Exactly. So I found the car,
yeah.
on the in the parking lot at Hump's restaurant, which the Humphrey family operated for many years in Glasgow.
Uh-huh.
Sadly, it's closed now. But
huh.
So I walked into the cafe and I looked around, but I didn't see anyone who looked like a famous writer. And,
yeah.
And so then I went into the bar and they were sitting in the lounge area. In the bar having lunch. And I think, as I remember, other than the bartender, I think they were the only people in there.
Yeah.
And so I kind of looked at them and Tess smiled at me and kind of motioned me over. And then
uh-huh.
I introduced myself and they said, sit down. and
you said, I've been chasing you
exactly.
all over town. I really want to meet you.
So then we talked probably for about an hour, but and they were very nice and cordial. But I have to say that I probably talked the most because I was kind of nervous and I was so unprepared to interview him.
Yeah.
And Tess talked. She was probably second in the talking the most category, and Ray the least.
Ray the least.
But
he was saving his words for the page, I imagine.
Yes. And so I wrote the article, and I actually just kind of wrote the story of what happened that day.
Oh, that's amazing.
And because I couldn't do anything else. But then I sent him information about his, about Plaskanai, and he wrote me and the article that I had written, and he wrote me a very nice note back, which I have saved.
Oh, anyway. Of course. That is so incredible. I have to say, I love Raymond Carver. I certainly never met him in Plaskanai or anywhere else, or Tess Gallagher, but I have taught his short story, The Cathedral, to many of my writing classes. And I just think it's such a masterpiece of a short story. Every time I teach it, I find something new to admire and love about it. So anyway, so I am very excited about the Raymond Carver Festival that is coming right up in Plaskanai on May 19th and 20th.
That's right.
And I believe you have been pretty involved with it, as well as involved with the Raymond Carver mural project, right? That is that on the hospital, the side of the hospital?
Yes, it is. Yes.
So cool.
Yes,
I love
thank
that.
Thank you. Thank you. Yes, that's been a project of the Plaskanai Arts Commission, which I'm not directly a member of, but I am involved in.
Yeah.
But we are having, actually, he was born in May 25th.
Yeah.
So we're having it within a week of his, and I believe it would be his 85th birthday this year. So we're actually the poet laureate of Oregon, Anise Mojani, will be there and will be one of our featured speakers and on the Friday evening reception. And then he will also do a workshop on Saturday morning, the 20th. We will have, during April, we ran a, which is Poetry Month, we ran a poetry contest for categories for all ages.
Yeah.
And we will be on Saturday then, after the workshops, we will be announcing those poetry
winners. Well, it just sounds like a packed and wonderful schedule. Can you tell us the website where people can go and get more info?
You bet. Go to www.plaskanailibrary.org, and that will have a link directly to the Raymond Carver Writing Festival.
Well, that is just fantastic. I just am so appreciative of the work you've done in journalism for the community over the years, and for all your work in putting this festival together. I think it's going to be marvelous. So I hope our listeners will join us there.
I hope they will too. And Saturday night we're going to have a poetry jam open mic. So please come and join us.
Yeah, it's going to be quite a party, quite a birthday party. So the Writers Guild of Astoria is a 501c3 nonprofit organization serving writers in Oregon and Washington. We hope that you will join us for the Raymond Carver Festival on May 19th and 20th. And until next time, keep the words flowing and your pencil sharp. I'm Marianne Monson for River Writers.